My name is Gary Butterfield, he, him.
My name is Kay Ross, she, her.
And you're listening to Watch Out for Fireballs. It is a Games Club podcast.
And this week we are talking about The Last Spell, which is a tactical RPG roguelite developed by Ishtar Games and published by The Arcade Crew for PC and contemporary consoles in 2023.
Yeah, this is going to be a special episode for a couple reasons. Mm-hmm. One, this is a patron demand. All of those are special because our patrons are special.
Yes.
Big thanks to Joseph. Also, this is going to be fairly zoomed out. This month is an interesting, other than poor little old Rage.
Yeah, sitting there alone.
Interesting month in terms of games that one can dedicate a whole lot of their life to.
Yeah.
You know, I played what I felt like enough of this to get it. And in a different world, this could have been like the hole for me. This could have been Isaac, You know, just like a slightly different world. It just wasn't because I had other stuff going on. Mm-hmm. We got to throw that out there that like, boy, there are people who go real deep in this. And there's a lot more of this than we played.
There is basically no ceiling on this thing.
Yes.
for our intents and purposes, at least. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it just kind of keeps going. And as is, there are little things we'll talk about. Like I like this game quite a bit.
Oh, me too.
You know, there are things that make it hard to cover for this format and things that kind of push this off of becoming a forever game, even though like roguelike tower defense Final Fantasy Tactics is very Gary-coded.
No, that sounds like a trap. You're going to end up like locked away in a gem or something.
Yes. Yeah. It's very Amontillado'd. But it did not quite Amontillado me for reasons we'll talk about.
Yeah.
But yeah, neat game. Mm-hmm. And hopefully, you know, Joseph's cool with the fact that we did not get master's degrees in this. Yeah. I told him. Like basically the roguelike rules, you know, city builder rules, those type of games, we're not going to get master's degrees in them.
Right. So. But yeah, let's talk about like the broad strokes of this. Let's talk about what you do. You play as the commander. and you lead the kind of tattered forces, the remnants of humanity in this post-apocalyptic fantasy world, trying to cast the spell, the last spell that will stop the cataclysm that is going on.
Yes. You do this, you go from town to town, defending them until the mages that surround like a crystal can cast their portion of the spell, yes, bringing back the seal. Mm-hmm. And this happens over the course of several days and nights. Mm-hmm. This is, we're getting like some rampart-based kind of modal gameplay. Mm-hmm. At night, large waves of mutants kind of rush in from all sides. And during the daytime, you are building defenses, improving your party, working on like an economy, doing a little kind of a city builder slash... boy, it's hard to even say. And turret defense, like tower mm-hmm. defense, like building yeah. defenses. It is a really big and mechanically complicated game.
Yes.
I think in terms of structure, this episode will be a lot like the episodes where I have a guest on where it's a little bit zoomed out. Because mm-hmm. I don't know how else to talk about it.
I don't know how to do it either because like you're making so many little decisions in this. Like it almost like I'm trying to think of another game where every number... you know, like so the stat can be like manipulated like yeah. this. Like, I'm thinking about like, I don't know, maybe like a monster train or something like that. Not for the roguelike DNA, but just because like basically everything is mutable.
It's very mutable.
Yeah. You know,
it's also a thing too, where I just want to put out on Front Street that like the version that we played, the kind of beginning of it, the strategies that we used and found fun, I'm sure are absolute joke baby dick strategies for people who are trying to or advance in the game. Mm-hmm. Like I spent what I do when we do one of these type games, I'm doing it for RimWorld as well, even though that's got hooks in me real good, mm-hmm. Is watch a bunch of YouTubes of people who are like, you know, tips, advanced tips, intermediate tips, tips for mm-hmm. the middle game and stuff to kind of see what later in the game looks like.
What the arc is, right?
Yes. And it was very different than how I played. Everything that I was like, this fucking rules. Like this is a really effective strategy is not. This episode is not advice. Yeah. It is, you know, I can give advice on Monster Trainer Isaac. I cannot give advice on this. I just have things that worked with me in absolutely baby playpen.
Yeah.
You know, absolute little shit.
Yeah.
You know, goblin dirt dick, poison water, fucking no balls, asshole, little like flat ass deflated.
Keep going.
Kind of like not a thought in his fucking head, just like one droopy eye, bad teeth. Fucking mustard yellow teeth. In that playpen, that's how my strategies worked.
Yeah, to analogize it in a way that, because more people played Dark Souls than played this, we're running around with the Drake sword left and right here.
Yes.
Right? Yeah, there's no growth for the strategies that we did.
Longbow on a tower, that's the Drake sword. And everyone's like, hey, towers actually really suck. You got to be constantly moving your eyes around and teleporter nodes. And I'm like, fuck. No, it seems pretty good.
But I like towers a lot.
Yeah, it seems pretty cool.
And I only just unlocked teleporter nodes. Like, you can't hold it against me that I didn't get those. Yeah, like,
yeah. Yep, it's one of these games where you play the part that we played to train you to play the real game.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's a whole separate gamotype. Mm-hmm. It's a very common kind of DNA for that.
Yeah.
So we're going to get into it. Beware of the structure.
Yes.
Talking about development first, Ishtar Games was formerly known as CCCP Games. It's a French studio that prior to this was known for making the narrative survival Dead In series. So Dead in Bermuda, Dead in Vinland, Dead in Loving It, all those games.
Dead in Loving It.
Yeah. Dead in Loving It. Dead in Love It. This is a small team. The studio grew to more than 12 people as they developed the last spell, however.
Yes. Yeah. And they had been making a lot of like narrative heavy games, like those Dead End games from what I looked at. I had never heard of them before. Kind of have some like visual novel and like light management kind of aspects to them. They wanted to try their hand at something more mechanically focused as a change of pace. And to decide what to do, they kind of looked at what was working for them at the time and the games that they were playing. And they just happened to be playing Battle Brothers, a tactical RPG that I was unaware of, and Slay the Spire. And that kind of like those two forces combined to kind of form the basis of what they wanted to aim for.
Yes. They have other inspirations. Some of these they don't almost have to be inspired by, you know, like Into the Breach, Disgaea, Final Fantasy Tactics, Dynasty Warriors. You can see all of that.
Yeah.
Like this is one of the games I would say that we've done that is the most a melange of other games.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's a lot of different little bits of things you do.
Yeah.
In this, it does make its own unique thing in the end. They're combined in a way that we haven't seen. It's not just the Taco Bell like ingredient pile, but it's interesting that you can see every part of this.
Yeah. And like, I can even see like older, you know, like there used to be kind of this zoomed in level of a strategy game. Remember the Castles, like the Castles series? This feels a lot like that to me.
Yeah. And I mentioned Rampart earlier.
Yeah.
It has a weird amount of Rampart DNA.
Thing is, I like most of these things.
Oh yeah, that's the thing, right? Like, like these are generally good. This is a cool idea.
Yeah.
They didn't want the game to have character classes. They wanted players to have open control over how their characters grew. I would argue they kind of made weapons into character classes.
Yeah.
You know, but it's again, that's fucking noob Drake sword opinion. Like some YouTuber would kill me for that. Their initial intention was to make the game a lot more faster, you know, a lot faster and more arcadey. And they were going to make, they didn't want to make day and night play differently. You just did different things during them, but you were in the same interaction model. Yeah. I'm glad they changed that.
Yes. And, you know, like the arcadey pace kind of went away in testing, like in testing and in early access. They saw that people liked deliberating for a long time.
Yes. And this is one of those games. This
sold
really well. You know, put out in 2019 in early access 2021, full release in 2023, and sold really well.
Yeah.
Way better than they expected it to. A lot of this was because of popularity of the streamers. It's one of those games. I'm sure Northern Lion has a series on this.
Yeah.
I hadn't heard of it before this.
Did I was gonna ask. I hadn't heard of it until Joseph brought it to us.
Same.
Yeah.
And you know, for something that feels like it was made for me, it's weird.
Just those strange little blind spots.
Yeah.
They've made two, and I think the third is coming out or just came out, kind of DLC expansions. We did not play those because we probably wouldn't have gotten to the content in them anyway.
Yeah. You have to put in a lot of hours into the base game for that to make sense, it feels like.
Yeah. But they, if each of them adds like a playable race and like a new map, Like this, you know, there are not very many like city maps in this. We'll talk about that. But it's a big deal.
Yes. So aesthetically, this is a nice looking game. We're looking at 2D isometric pixel art. We have a fixed angle. We can't move things around. Everything looks good. The characters look good. Everything's very charming. The monsters look good. I'm glad you have this in the notes. As you get harder and further into it, like early on, it does not really matter telling monsters apart. It's just kind of big versus small. As you get further in, it becomes more important to understand the difference between like rushers and, you know, archers and such. Sometimes monsters just look like little zerglings. To me, it is sometimes difficult to tell them apart. You can always hover over. And I'm sure this, on a long, you spend enough time, this will become second nature, but it didn't for me.
Yeah. Like, it's a little bit funny because like early on when you're looking at your weapon skills and stuff like that, you think, oh, like this is made to like focus on a single guy over several moves or turns. And I'm just like, I don't see that. Eventually get like elite enemies and stuff in that are not super well differentiated. I could have done with like better color coding or, there are any number of ways to do it.
You're not generally focusing down. You're generally killing wide swaths of people, which is where the Dynasty Warriors comes in. And then the music is hard rock. I don't understand why necessarily. I don't hate it, but it's like, you know, it wasn't necessarily my thing. It did not help me get into the groove. I think it's supposed to feel like very epic, like you're doing Dynasty Warriors running through using your hammer to smash a huge swath of enemies and such. The fact that it was turn-based at this point, and I was, once it got hard, I was being very deliberative, even down to my individual moves, made the music clang a little bit.
Yeah. Like over the course of the several nights, like the map does go from being kind of pastoral to just like covered in gristle.
Yes.
Like there is some, is it metal to this?
Yes.
That clangs with like the chibi, that's not quite chibi, but the kind of cutesy.
Oh, the little guys are definitely cute.
Yeah,
your heroes, you know. And then just the idea that I'm just spending a long time agonizing over how I spend these last three action points over like dung 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 dung. It's weird. Yeah, I imagine that was at least perhaps somewhat of a holdover from when it was more arcadey.
Yeah. There are like good hooks and stuff in it. Like, you know, it's like well done. It's just a very strange tone, I think, to strike.
Yeah. There's a narrative and there's a whole lot of story to this that felt largely optional to me. I know that if I did go deep on this, I'd ignore all this shit. you know, we get some dialogue or in the game, with this kind of dialogue between these two gods. We'll talk about, when we talk about the upgrade paths. The opening is where we get most of the story.
Yes.
The world is organized around the city called Glentfine, and the kingdom struggled in endless war since time immemorial. You know, that's what they do until the Archmage Hieronymus Teller, and his partner, Hieronymus Penn, concocted a spell that they thought would end the wars for good. Here, this kind of magical nuke. And they deployed it, but they did not know the royal family was visiting at the time.
Nope.
Very funny. And this just made the wars worse.
Shit, we got a King Ralph. Oh, we King Ralphed it.
Yeah, we Ralphed it. The designated spell. The one that remains after this.
And this, escalated things further. This magic was out there, this purple magic that eventually like, corrupted the world. Yeah, this mist that overtook everything, mutated humans, mutants called Clars, Clawers, started kind of like wiping out civilizations.
If I had a nickel for every evil mist or a fog game, I'd have like a buck. that we've done. So the commander took charge of the remaining human forces defending these havens as mages researched the last spell. It's all that would eliminate magic forever. After this nuke, also magic was illegal. Like mages are very rare in this. You do magic in this, but it's like one of those things where that's different. Bad magic.
Yeah, so like that's pinned to an item.
Yeah, it comes from a book. It's okay if it comes from a book, but if you have to like thrust your hips at a crystal in the middle of town, that's no good.
Wizards? Yeah. Sorcerers?
Yep, very similar.
And that's the story. Like there's more that's kind of spooled out, and like there is a climax to this, you know, that you're going to see in 80 or so hours probably. There's a twist about the gods and who the commander is and stuff like that.
The idea that there's a twist between the gods is one of the like least least secret things. They're very sinister, both of them. Like if you have any amount of genre awareness. The maps themselves are fixed. These are towns that are already in ruin. They have a safe zone around this magic circle, and then there's kind of ruined buildings around it and some crumbled defenses. Enemies flood in from the borders, generally just from one side, you know, at first, and then slowly start surrounding you.
Yeah, it'll give you an indication of like what side they're going to come in, and you can eventually get something called the Seer's Hut that lets you allocate a worker to it. And we'll talk about that in the daytime sections. That gives you a little bit more specificity.
And that intel is super useful to me. Mm-hmm. Would it surprise you to hear that that's a waste of a worker?
No.
And you should be using the other one?
No.
I had no idea.
The one that pushes the fog back?
Pushes it back.
Yeah. No, I use both.
It was useful to me. I just didn't, you know, I didn't know that one would be bad because I didn't have teleporter gates. I didn't have my heroes everywhere. Mm-hmm. Like, it made a lot of sense to know where to go and have a hero that could solo.
Yeah,
that area. You have the safe zone. You want to keep enemies outside of it. If they end the turn inside, or if they attack a wall, they raise a value called panic. And the more panic in the city, you get fewer rewards. This does lead to a death spiral.
Yeah,
this is a poor get poorer mechanic. I generally don't like those. Mm-hmm. At the level I was playing, it did not become a big deal.
Right.
I could imagine if I was much more by the skin of my teeth, losing runs. And we'll talk about what losing run feels like.
Yeah.
In this game, which is one of the things that stops us from getting its hooks in me like permanently.
Yeah. Like the guides that I read were just like, oh, everything you get from panic, or, you know, from not having a lot of panic, like those rewards, like that's just like, don't assume you're going to get those. Like that's just gravy. And it's like, that is where the majority of my economy comes from.
Yeah. I don't have an economy yet. Cause I don't know how to play the game yet. Also, I don't have a lot of it unlocked. Like this is a slow unlock cycle.
Yeah.
As we'll get. Yeah. If they get to your magic circle, they'll destroy it. You lose your run. I guess this makes sense to talk about this now.
Yeah.
The losing in this game feels bad. And the reason it feels bad in this and it doesn't feel bad in something like Isaac to me is that the iteration loop is long.
Yeah, very long.
You lose a lot in this. We are in that mythical third space for roguelikes. Like people have talked about, you know, you have permadeath campaigns, like you have a very long kind of like an XCOM experience.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have Isaac, and there's like, what about like the all day, like the one day roguelike?
Yeah.
You know, and Darkest Dungeon came along into that. This is that.
Yeah.
Each run takes a very long time. You're out for a certain number of nights, and these ramp up very quickly. Mm-hmm. And if you're at all struggling, you're taking a lot of time to make your decisions. It's an immense amount of progress to lose. There is a meta progression, which we'll talk about, but like, it feels like shit.
My first run, I got to the boss on it. I felt like really, really good. And then I lost it. And I was like, I looked at the clock and I was like, oh fuck. Oh, that's what this is. Okay.
It's a game that does, that's something that in the past you have felt from roguelikes generally.
Yeah.
If I'm throw in a half hour or 40 minutes into something, I can tank that.
Yeah.
I don't feel that. But once we start getting like past the 3 hour mark, I start feeling it really hard.
There's always some progression, but not as much as if you cleared, right?
Yes. You know? And the progression itself is very slow. It's one of those pick from a menu. Again, we'll talk about that. And that's a thing where like, if you don't know what to pick, you can take all of those, you know, you fail to run in 2.5 hours. You take all of that progress you made, all those points that you got, and put them into a thing you're kind of guessing might be useful, and it's not.
Yeah.
And then it's like effectively like you did not make real progress. Like you did, it just doesn't feel like it.
Yeah.
Whatever that illusion is that like I'm still making progress even when I lose, this did not sell it to me in a way that was harmful to its long-term viability.
Yeah. Losing that first one made me go for the kind of easy mode in this a little bit, just so I could see more of it. Right. Yeah. Like I'm only going to have, you know, like about 2 weeks with it, you know, like I have with any game that we do for the show. Right.
It's not so we'll talk about how they do the easy mode, which I like a lot.
Yeah.
The difficulty here. Mm-hmm. They do not rob content from you.
Yeah.
Doing it. It's not one of those things.
Yeah. Which is very, very good.
And it also at the end of the city, it will still be hard, even with modifiers.
Oh God. Yeah. Yeah. I was really surprised. Like how down to the wire it came, even with the, what felt like cheating,
especially the second boss.
Yeah.
Like, you know, that's also a thing that kind of plays into this. We'll talk about the bosses specifically later, but they're nightmares. They're really intense, huge spikes in difficulty from the previous night. So like this idea that you can be doing pretty good, like you can never become complacent.
Yeah.
Which I like, but it does mean the first time you fight a boss when you don't know what to expect, if it beats you, that is, you've lost so much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, and you know, the iteration loop, like you might not realize like what the later stage of the boss fight looks like.
Yeah. You know, there's nothing to indicate what you have to actually do to defeat a boss mm-hmm. until you fuck around with it.
Yeah. Yeah. Like to give perspective on this, like I beat the second map on this and I clocked out at like just under 20 hours.
Same.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did the second map, started the third one a little bit and was having fun, but I just needed to move on to the next thing.
Yeah.
You know, just for work. Mm-hmm. Like it wasn't like I would quit then, but it would work really well if I like poked out in the background for a long time. I just don't have a job for that.
Yeah.
So your initial party is randomly generated. You have three members by default. You can get rid of characters and recruit new ones once mm-hmm. you build it in. This is a lot of money. Like generally you'll want to build your characters or reroll.
Yeah.
You know, just start over until you get characters that you want. And the characters don't have classes. What you're doing here when you're rerolling, because you can change weapons and stuff like that, or you're looking at traits.
Yes.
Here they come with a set of equipment, and then they have a set of traits, and these can be really, really good, or they can be devastatingly bad.
Yeah.
Again, RimWorld DNA.
Yeah. And like you have to, there's also like some Darkest Dungeon in that. Don't those characters also have traits to them as well?
100%. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Just to draw comparisons to other things we've done. And like you quickly get a sense for what's going to be important on that. Like after my first run, I determined that like, okay, anything that takes away movement points and, action points, obviously bad. Like you can kind of intuit that. But then there's also like anything that harms the amount of damage that I'm going to have to do. I do not want to have to spend any levels getting out of debt, because over the course of a run, like you don't carry characters over from one run to another. Always start over. You always start fresh. Over the course of a run, your whatever damage type you end up having can just not grow fast enough to
cut
through what you need.
Yeah. Yeah. So it ends up making a character, you can get a character that's set up for a specific build you may not get the thing for and you have to pivot.
Yeah.
That is interesting, but with how much time investment and how it feels when you lose, it kind of clings a little bit.
The
big thing I would avoid when I was having things is what you had mentioned, movement points, action points, and then accuracy.
That's
missing
also
in this game is fucking devastating, because mm-hmm. Especially in the later bits where you're calculating things down to live or die. Trying to get accuracy dialed was really important for me.
There are things that are less important. Like it's really frustrating when you have a non-caster and then like all of the upgrades that you get on a level are like related to magic, like things like range damage or like propagation. It's like, my shit's not for that.
Well, you swap them though.
Yeah.
Like at that point, because your class is determined by weapon.
Yeah.
Which was really more or less like I'm sure again, that's breaking a rule, but that's what it feels like.
Yeah.
And there are more stats in this than you'd expect, including ones that are outside of the usual suspects. Mm-hmm. You have different damage types. You have resistance, guard, which is an armor that will recharge every turn, things like that. But then you have things like reliability, which is your damage floor. You have things like momentum, mm-hmm. which synergizes with the whole system. There's opportunism. It will look at traits that are not typically looked at in other games of this type. So like if your character is fighting alone, if you're fighting an enemy who is alone, mm-hmm. If the enemy already has a status effect, if you've moved that turn, things like that, like you can, all these little things that suggest builds here, and you're kind of given what you are given. You can kind of guess what kind of build you want to take it in, but when you get level ups, you get a draft from like a pool of level ups, like rare, common, and uncommon, and they can be anything about like a primary and tertiary or secondary stat as a thing. You can just not get them. Like for example, the thing that happened for me a lot is I had one run where poison was really good.
Yeah,
I had a druid, got all the poison synergies, and he was unstoppable, and it was really cool. Mm-hmm. Next time I saw that ability, I thought, cool, I'm going to move for poison, and the poison abilities just did not come up.
Yeah.
In the random rolled stuff. That's fine. Like, it's good to have to pivot
and
stuff like that. But it did make the strategy, like the planning foresight part of it, feel a little bit lesser.
Yeah. It's like, just like, oh, well, I wasted those early level ups based on information that I couldn't have. Like, poison is not especially portable as a stat. It's not as portable as like new action points or new movement points are, or just damage across the board, right?
And importantly, there's no respecs.
Yes.
Because the idea is it's supposed to be a short enough loop that you're just going to get a new person anyway. Mm-hmm. But when you're first playing, it's very hard. It doesn't feel that way.
Yeah. And you can get access to like rerolls of the draft. Like you can redraw on a level up. But instead of getting five to pick from, you get sequentially less.
You start with this. You don't have to unlock getting rerolls of your skills.
Yeah.
You have to for like other things. But this one you just start with. And you only really want to do this if you don't have anything useful.
Right.
At all. The fact that these have rarities is weird. You're not just doing a build. Like, for example, on a level up, you might get a general damage up, and that will have a quality. So it'll either be a rare general damage up that's a lot of damage up, or a common general damage up that's only a little bit.
Yeah.
So sometimes you're put in interesting situations where you want to choose something that's universal, like damage up, but you have a common damage up, but maybe you have a rare movement up. And it gives you a lot more movement, and that might be useful.
Yeah.
Even though, generally speaking for damage, always felt like a good thing to do. Apparently in advanced play, status effects are more important for crowd control. I never got there. To where that was my concern.
Yeah. Like I never had poison be anything more than a novelty on characters. Right.
It's really good when it works. Yeah. I never had a successful momentum build.
Okay.
And I knew I could see the shape. I could smell what wasn't there. I could Wolverine smell the outline of it, but it just never lined up for me.
Yeah. I fucked up with momentum a lot. Like once I got like a swordsman and figured out how to use it, like I was clearing swaths of enemies, like more so than my casters. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's different kinds of like, we'll talk about this when we get to the weapons. There's different kinds of ways to address multiple targets in this.
Yeah.
And you can do it either through movement, but you also have AoEs, stuff like that.
So you just have to be flexible in the way that you're growing your party members, and just be ready to kind of, swap them. There's like a little bit of a similarity, like at the beginning of any Final Fantasy Tactics run. And whenever you recruit a new character, like they come usually with just, okay, this is a squire or this is a chemist, right? And then you look at it and you say like, oh no, like this one came, like you're in the wrong major, bud, based on like the brave and faith. Like you're always going to have to do like a little bit of kind of like reconfiguration because they're going to come out of the box wrong. Right.
Yeah.
That's kind of like this. And you're kind of doing it all the time.
Yeah. Doing the first step is good. And then sometimes there won't be more road.
Yeah.
After that, there's also a perk system in addition to like your quirks that you have, traits. And this perk system to me is a little disappointing.
Yeah.
It's like a perk grid with columns. Everybody has the same first four, I want to say. And then the final three are kind of randomized from different archetypes. And you have, you get different perks. And they're contingent. So it's set up like a go of Connect Four, and you had to kind of move down it. And these were all almost exclusively things that did not seem cool at first. Like ones that seemed cool would come up sometimes. There are ones that are very powerful that I understand are very powerful now, like reading about it and watching YouTubes. But I found it hard to get excited about these. Every once in a while, there was a good one. Like, oh, I can put glass cannon on my archer who's going to be up in a tower.
Yeah.
That's sick. That's going to be really useful. But a lot of these feel very conditional and kind of shitty. Like this is where like the poison build comes from. Like you'll just roll a bunch of poison perks up during this. Or there's a weird like vampire things you can do, like life drain builds you can do, things like that. They just have to come up. You don't know what kind of tree you're going to get.
You can cast from hit points. Like there's a blood mage kind of thing for that, which is weird because magic isn't the only thing that costs mana in this. And like that's another thing you have to look at when you get a new character is like you can see like the entire field of perks that are available to you. Like if this guy doesn't come with the one that lets spells propagate diagonally, like, well, okay, well, no, I'm not going to have you be a druid or use the druid staff or like the forbidden tome.
Yeah.
Right. Like you're going to be limited in how you can use spells. Right.
Yeah.
So, you need to look ahead. I want to clarify. So you talked about like, oh, you need to get a Connect Four run. I did not notice needing to pick anything contiguous. It wasn't like I had to go.
It's not quite Connect Four. Detect Four. Connect Four. Mm-hmm. Detect Four is easy. Yeah. Just look at the fucking little chess pieces.
Yeah, I'm seeing four things all the place. Yeah.
I can look at four things right now. Mm-hmm. It's more like you have to get a certain number of like the first level perks to get to the second one.
This comes up around number three.
I was trying to describe the grid and how it worked, and for some reason, Connect 4 was the first thing that popped in my
head. Like each column is like roughly like organized around like, oh, this is physical, this is ranged. I just wanted to make sure that the dependencies.
Yeah, you don't lock in a lane. That's a good correction because I was unclear.
Yeah. I thought that was the case, before I realized just how portable a lot of the stats were. And it's like, the guy that I have using the sword might benefit from some of the range stuff here.
It's also a thing too, where they level up as you go, but you can use a point on something that's lower level as well.
Yes.
Like if you want to get all of the level one perks, you can, rather than going up a tree through that. And sometimes that can be useful. There's a couple, levels where it felt like there was something more useful than what was at the next level.
Yeah.
For me.
Yeah. So like that's how you put your character together, and you're going to spend most of your time in this in the night phase. This is when combat happens, and you're going to be fighting a lot of zombies, zergling kind of combination kind of deals. And they build in this tactical imbalance. Like by default, you start with three heroes, and you're fighting hundreds of things.
Yes.
And they pile up.
It does mean that getting an extra hero is huge.
Oh, God, yeah.
During this. And the sides take turns. The heroes can act in any order, and you can interleave their actions. Mm-hmm. So you can do that however you like. You can switch around there. And you can also hover over enemies and see what they're going to do.
Yes.
Roughly, like where they're going to end up.
Yeah.
So it's got a little bit of that Into the Breach DNA of semi-perfect information.
Yeah. Their behavior is pretty predictable.
Yes.
And what they're going to do actually changes depending on what you do. So like, I don't have this in a particular note here, but like when you attack an enemy, there's a chance, a very good chance that they're going to end up wounded. And that means they can't move as far. Maybe they, can take fewer actions. And over the course of a relatively short amount of time, you can kind of figure like, okay, they're going to go for barricades first. Like they're not going to like seek out the door. It'll be good. It'll be good for them if they find it, but like they're kind of just going to go for whatever wall is going to be here. They're going to prioritize heroes. You can kind of figure that out.
It actually does a pretty good job of, in a turn-based tactical way, modeling a lack of intelligence, like a feralness to them. Mm-hmm. The early maps in a really candy bit of game design have a bunch of just kind of freestanding barricades out in the field. And, you think like, oh, this is just for color. This just shows that this was destroyed. But they will focus on those barricades through that. They're not inside your walls. They don't raise panic. It's just going to slow them down.
Yeah. Like, otherwise, if you look at the barricades and see, like, the stats on them, see how much health they have, you think, oh, why would I ever use this? It's kind of like placing decoys, almost.
Yeah. It's to rob a turn, because tactic games are about turn economy, this one including.
Yeah. So you've got movement points, you have action points, and some skills take more AP. Like every weapon, most weapons have, two basic moves that they can do that take, the baseline level of AP, mostly one, but there are some that take two. And there are kind of more advanced moves that cost more AP and more mana. And very importantly, like mana is an important stat because it powers like all things. Like if you want to do like a super, I attack three enemies in a line sword move, that's going to cost some mana.
Yeah.
Right.
And you're going to get mana back.
Yes.
You have a regain. You can also do this manually during the town phase, which we'll talk about. This is just, I'm not going to keep hammering on this, but I just noticed it when I was doing research. Like things I thought were useful, but are actually bad. I generally would heal my mana with temples. Mm-hmm. I'd build little temples that could heal my guys. They got a free action to do it. Heal my mana back up. Apparently the mana regen is much better. And you're looking for an equilibrium between those two things, like how much you use and how much you get back. Mm-hmm. Never got to the point where I felt like I could afford to do that.
Yeah.
It's worth noting that you want to use all of your AP. Mm-hmm. We'll talk about this later, but characters can have offhand weapons.
Yeah.
If, let's say, you have 7 AP and your main attack always does 2, you desperately want something in your offhand that can use 1.
Yeah.
Any turn you're not using, every one of your action points is a waste, and the game will warn you at the end of turn. Second, movement points, you have to be kind of careful with them, because when we talk about interlacing, you can also interlace within a specific person's move.
Yeah.
So if you're using your whole move to get up to the front line, you won't be able to move away from it. you're going to be there, you have to have a plan for being there at the end of, or, you know, during the next turn when the monsters have their phase.
Yeah. You don't want to end up stranded, because when the next turn starts and the enemies kind of flood in, you can end up trapped. Like, you can't move through enemies.
Or you do. Like, you want to set something up. Like, oh, you've got like a vampirism, you know, that is near you. You get a buff. When this happens, you get really good buffs when you're fighting alone. You have an AoE that works out from your center. So you're trying to get surrounded. Like, you're making yourself a human trap through this.
Yeah.
Really neat.
Yeah. So I guess, you don't want to do it. You want to make sure that you want to do it.
Exactly. Yeah. The intention is the important part.
Yeah. That's and like, that is the caveat that applies to like all of this, right? Yes. Like, I will make, I'm going to make a statement like, oh, this is good or bad. It's like, no, you just need to understand, because like, any of this can be viable. It's just unlikely that you're going to be in a situation where you're maximizing it.
The way that you, what actions you have, there are some perk actions that you can get, but for the most part, it's determined by your equipment. Your weapon primarily will give you most of your verbs. You also can get consumables. Consumables work like Dark Souls. You use them a certain time per night, so do not be scared of using them. This is something I feel like the game does not tutorialize very well. So I shied away from consumables. Gold is very precious, but the fact that I can use them multiple times per night is actually huge.
It's a really big deal.
Including like spells, including scrolls.
Yeah. Like
you get recharge.
You get scrolls, and it's just like, okay, well, I just have the ability to do this. Not very many times. You know, it's only like two times per night, three times per night. But like, that can be pretty big. Like, getting a scroll of teleport if you don't get the blink perk, pretty big deal, right?
Well, and just multiple times per night, and the fact that they refresh.
Yeah.
You know, in the semiotics of video games, a scroll is a one-time use item. Not how it works here. Same thing with potions, etc. Yeah. So this is a big thing that I learned over the course of the game. Use the shit out of these, and they actually come back.
Yes.
And there's kind of a staggering number of weapons. You're not exposed to all of them right away. This is part of the meta progression.
Yeah.
Generally, what a weapon will do for you is give you your hurt boxes. You know, you either have weapons that excel at different things. So you talked about the sword earlier. The sword will hit things that are far away. You know, you end up closing the distance yourself as part of the move. You have daggers that are really good for enemies that are alone. And then you have various things that do kind of swath damage in different patterns. You know, either kinds of cones or T-shaped things or long lines, things like that. And then a further balancing factor is whether they're one or two-handed. So either you can have a shield or not.
Shield or like an offhand.
You always have an offhand. Like, it's weird. Like, you get an offhand weapon in the shield, but then you also have a different equipment set.
You can have two. You can have two sets. So like, it's important to like understand, like, an offhand is what you equip instead of a shield, and it just gives you like a free version of the basic attack.
One version of that, and then the second equipment thing, there's no cost to switching between your two equipment modes.
So you
always want to have everyone outfitted for like four different versions of AoE, four different ways they can do damage, basically.
And this is going to inform your strategy, right? Like, when I unlock swords, like, it's not just that you can attack things that are, you know, a little bit further away. It works movement into the, into the move. So like, certain attacks will have, I forget what it is, like move ahead or something like that. If you kill the enemy, you will walk into their square.
Right?
Or like, there's a, you know, a version of their basic attack where it's like, you attack the guy and you end up on the other side of him. And so like, you can dance through a whole group of enemies and then retain your movement so you can reposition for the next thing.
Yeah. Get back out of danger.
Yeah.
You know, like they each weapon, a great thing about this, something that if I compare this with something like Dead Cells, which is a game that I liked less than this, is it feels like every weapon is pretty equally viable.
Yes.
If I figure out how to use it, it was good. You know, you just have to spend a little bit of time playing with it and figuring out what it's trying to teach you, how it's trying to get you to play. And there's like a really crazy amount of micro differences between these. Like, you think that there wouldn't be that many differences between wand, orb, scepter, staff, and tome, but they're all really pretty different.
The emphasis on AoE stuff, even in things that you wouldn't expect to have AoE, and some of the attack patterns that you end up getting, this is where it feels like the Disgaea stuff comes from. Because like, the hurt boxes on Disgaea attacks are fucking ridiculous.
You get like a weird little shape you get to hurt in front of you. It does that. It also feels a little Dynasty Warriors to me. Like, when you come down, you have a big like cone-shaped swath that you're able to do with a spear. By shaking it back and forth, and you just kill a bunch of Zerglings that way. Things like that.
Like what weapons did you end up like really like favoring or leaning toward?
So all of the basic weapons I unlocked in my playthrough, I always had my strongest characters were archers. Mm-hmm. Just, you know, again, apparently they're not that great, but my longbowmen were my best characters. Ultimately, in the final, you know, the one where I beat the second village, I had two archers going. And then I usually had a spear person and a great axe person.
Yeah.
At the very least, down on the floor. And then a magic user of some stripe. Mm-hmm. I spent time with all of the staffs, but not that much time to get to know, like internalize all of the differences of them. Like I would see the differences. I tended not to favor the druidic one because you had to be close.
Yes.
That tended to do wave-based sprays out from the caster rather than from a distance.
Yeah, the druidic one and the power staff both have kind of shorter range and are more focused on like status effects.
Yes.
So like the druidic one, you know, that one's good because its varsity level attack does poison that is contagious. So if something doesn't die, it'll spread the poison to whatever is next to it. Mm-hmm. And it will also like, you can, you know, some of these do alley-oops as well. Like the druidic stuff has like an acid spray. It's a pretty wide AOE that will just make everything in the area vulnerable to whatever the next attack is going to be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I ended up using debuffs, but not tons of them.
Yeah.
It took me a minute to get into debuffs.
It didn't feel worth it to me
because of the difficulty we're playing at.
Yeah.
You know, like because we were so early on the game, eventually this is really key. You have to start juggling these monsters doing crowd control. It was mostly for me at the point I was playing a race to get rid of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I believe people and I've seen footage. It does matter later. Yeah. Like a status effect can be more powerful than actually damage. Like it is in say Darkest Dungeon, you know, but I didn't get there.
Yeah. I didn't get there either.
In a general sense, I did not have very much use for guns. They seemed like worse bows to me in this.
Yeah. The pistol did not have much use to me at all. Like they handle resistances differently.
Mm-hmm.
Rifle actually ended up having some pretty good, my only problem with it was that, everything is really expensive. You can't do very much, with it, but like the rifle has a really good, area, like the, damage is not very high, but it's like suppressing fire. It like reduces movement and like reduces, their ability to like to do attacks. It's not quite a stun, but it's like, you can just pick a whole, you know, line of enemies.
Like a swath to debuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
These also play around with minimum ranges.
Yes.
The ranged weapons as well. So like one of the reasons why you might not do a longbow, why you might choose a shortbow, is the longbow has a minimum range.
Mm-hmm.
If something actually gets to the tower where you have your longbowmen, they're kind of fucked. But having, you know, multiple longbowmen and they have like a snipe shot thing, there's a single high damage attack, and their range is huge.
Yeah.
And increased by being on a tower. Instead of having characters teleport around, because I just unlocked the teleporters when I stopped as well, I could have guys snipe from the other side of the map, which felt very cinematic. It felt very Lord of the Rings.
I was doing so many things because it was cinematic.
Yeah, like it's exactly like Battle of Helm's Deep.
Yeah.
To have your sniper, your bow sniper, help out your fighter on the ground, the dwarf on the ground, by killing a guy that's giving him trouble. And then you can just imagine little Gimli and little Orlando Bloom.
Just nodding at each other. Yeah. They're all kissing. Nodding while they kiss. It's it's an expert move. Yeah. And like the difference between longbow and shortbow, like that was like illustrative to me because like a shortbow is like that has more like AOE kind of stuff to it. Like you get like these weird like spotty patterns that you can do with that to thin out crowds quite literally. Like the squares are kind of staggered. Yeah, yeah. Whereas the longbow is like a ranger's bow. Like you end up being able to do like the sniper stuff, but also like the nuke attack on that is like frost arrows that will like slow enemies down.
Possibly
like,
in a wide.
Yeah,
not even slow. It could possibly stun enemies, which is huge. So it's like it's really fun to get these because they're all useful.
Yeah.
A key to like if you're gonna make a tactical game where I'm gonna have a bunch of choices, making me really want to do everything that I can do.
Yeah.
Is great.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it does a really good job of that. Looking at the DLCs, the thing that makes me most interested in them is that the new races bring new weapons.
Yeah.
And stuff like the dwarves get a cannon and they can rocket jump.
Uh-huh.
That's pretty fun.
That's really fun. Yeah.
This is pretty fun.
This is one of those sliding doors, like alternate world kind of things where like, I would so be into this.
Yeah. I feel like I could have gone deep. in a different universe. As is, I was really satisfied. Unlocking a new weapon did not feel like it does in Dead Cells to me. It felt really good.
Yeah.
I was always eager to try them.
Mm-hmm.
And the old ones remain viable. There aren't any strictly better weapons that I could find. That's really hard to do.
Yeah.
You know, like I was still using, you know, you start off with the hammer. Mm-hmm. Or I did start out with a hammer and having the hammer moveset. That was still useful. Like my final run where I ended up beating the second map, I also had a hammer character.
It's really good. Like you're able to do like a U-shaped AoE in front of you.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah. Lots of stuns.
Mm-hmm.
Through that. So you use these with action points, as we mentioned. Your skills are really, really flexible. So you can either have people who pick off high value targets. You can have people who do AoEs of like scum, you know, of just little shits.
Mm-hmm.
After that, you kind of do both.
Yeah.
There are tons of status effects in this. Again, I didn't quite get into it, but there are a lot of them.
Yeah.
Here. I also didn't get into elemental differences.
No.
Very much. I understood there were things that would resist me, but I often, even with getting a secondary weapon, because I wasn't putting all of my heroes against every threat, the hero who maybe had that secondary weapon was on the other side of the map.
Yeah.
And was busy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I just kind of had to push through. I feel like that would not fly on higher difficulties, but they give me tools around it.
Yeah. And we talked about like, okay, surgical attacks and trying to just clear the field, right? There is pretty good enemy variety in this, just not visually.
Yeah. Plenty of enemy variety. And they're going to do different things that are annoying. They have enemies that will buff each other, you know, from things that range enemies are a real problem. They can go right for your walls, which increases panic. That's a big deal. Mm-hmm. And then there are like elite enemies that are big. Yeah. As well. The first guy, did you get got by the first guy you run to that blows up?
No, I spotted what he did and I was like, okay, yeah, I don't want anybody next to that guy. So I don't think I ever got, cleared by one of them.
I got blowed up by one of those guys once. The first time he showed up, like I did not, I sent a guy at him. I'm like, oh, I got to fight a guy. It was early on in the game where I did not realize how different the enemies actually were going to be. And there's hover. Over, like you can get this information. It's not strictly hidden, but ideally you would read it.
The early game kind of teaches you like, oh, zombies is the same, right? Yeah.
That's what it feels like at the very least.
Yeah.
Even if there is a slight difference between like a crawler and a clawer, you know?
Yeah. But like runners are really big deals, right?
Yes.
Like they have a huge movement range and like they're just going to go straight. Like they will sometimes even ignore heroes and ignore barricades. Right.
Yeah.
So like you kind of can't have everybody out, you know, at the frontmost lines. Like you kind of need a rear guard almost.
Or a sniper tower.
Yeah.
Like that was really good for cleaning that stuff up for me.
Yeah.
On a long enough timeline, like if you're playing in advance, you'd have just one of your teleporter gates would go back into town.
Yeah.
You can end up in situations where things get outside of your perimeter or inside your perimeter and you have to actually send somebody back.
Yeah.
That happened to me. Somebody got past my archer tower and then because of my minimum range, I couldn't do anything.
Yeah.
So again, very cinematic. I had my archer jump down and kill him with a secondary weapon and then get back on the tower.
Yeah.
Like it's weird for a turn-based tactical game like this to have these, you know, I keep referencing it, but like Helm's Deep moments in it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there are worse things a game can do than
100% the Battle of Helm's Deep. It's great.
Yeah.
Coolest looking medieval battle in film.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, like there are some of these that are emergencies, not just the the big ones, like blockers, like field of view is a big deal on this.
Yes.
Blockers, they cast a shadow, right? Yeah.
Well, and it's also just because this game allows you to manipulate everything, there are a lot of skills that eliminate the need for field of view.
Yeah.
Like you can do a build that does not require a line of sight. And when these guys come up, you have a really hard counter to them.
Yeah.
You know, there's just a lot here. Mm-hmm. There's a lot here.
There's a lot here. Yeah. When the winged ones started showing up, that was problems for me.
Yeah. flying guys suck.
Yeah.
Very difficult. And the boss of the first town
is
based around that concept.
Yeah.
Yeah. Day phase is really important here. This is very funny because it's like a list of things you have to do during the day and it gets longer as you unlock more things.
Yep.
You have a literal checklist on one side of your map of things to do. During the day.
It's also in the wrong order.
Yes. Yeah. So like, this is a building phase. Your heroes can level up if they got enough experience. You get a draft of items, of things to pick here. You can manipulate that. Of course, their upgrades give you more.
Yeah. And like, part of the meta upgrade is like removing the common drops for particular categories, right?
Yeah. So if I'm going to get wands, they're going to be good wands. You eventually also can get meta upgrade that like favors wands. Wands have a higher drop rate. So if you find a weapon you like, you can make that more likely to happen.
Yeah.
There are kind of three main resources here. There are gold. This you use this to build and upgrade buildings. You can buy gear. You can recruit heroes. Mm-hmm. And you can get gold mines eventually. You can get gold a lot of different ways. Mm-hmm. One of my favorite things is corpses. Enemies will leave corpses and you can send miners out to like harvest them. And then something that's it's very useful, but I did not know about until I stopped playing, basically, is that you can deconstruct the ruins that come with your base.
Yeah, that is a really good big source of early materials. I focused on materials for those. Like, you can do it with a gold focus. Mm-hmm. There's also something. So we talked about this corpses. You did say one of my favorite things is corpses.
One of my favorite things is corpses.
Yeah. Good.
No, I was gonna say it sounds like a one of those PSP games.
Yeah,
like where it's like, really, I can explore the dungeon. Like there's that era of PSP games that all had names like that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's visual novel naming.
Yeah.
like those corpses are not guaranteed to show up. They show up where a bunch of things were killed. So if you're trying to game those, then you want to try and herd enemies into a focused place, like a kill box.
Yeah, you
want to
make a kill zone.
And the bigger the pile, eventually, like the elite ones, you can. You can excavate those with an item focus and just like it becomes another item drop for you if you decide to dedicate the workers to it.
Throttled by workers.
Yes.
As we mentioned, like we have this later in the notes, but it's worth saying now because we're going to use these for everything.
Yes.
You build houses. This means you get more workers. These are like points you can put into things.
Yes.
The mine will passively make a gold mine. The gold mine will generate passive passive gold, passive gold. But if I want to, I can throw a worker in there and get more.
Yeah.
And then you can upgrade that gold mine. This requires fewer workers, or I can activate it more times.
Yeah.
There's salvage shops for materials, which I'll talk about in a bit. Like you basically can use workers to juice the buildings you have.
Yes.
In addition to corpses, going and harvesting corpses.
Yeah. Workers end up being super important because it is kind of the way that you like flex your priorities almost, right? Like, I took a real beating that round. I need to dedicate some workers to the healing stuff. I use a lot of spells that round. I need to dedicate them to mana, et cetera, et cetera. It's basically like your discretionary funds.
Points for your town.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're kind of doing this. The other thing you do in town, in addition to building different kind of buildings, all have different focuses. The inn is really important because you get more heroes, gold mines, salvage camps. Then there are buildings for each weapon type you can get. So you can go there and buy that weapon or get one dropped, rather.
Yeah.
It adds it to your draft there at the end. Same thing with armor. Eventually you unlock trinkets for this, consumables, things like that.
Yeah.
And then you're also using materials primarily to build defensive objects. And this is really fun. Mm-hmm. This is where you're building walls. So this is where the rampart comes in. You're recontiguating your walls. Mm-hmm. You also make turrets. Turrets all get a free turn at the end. One of the traits I really liked was human turret, which turns your people into having a free turret blast that come out of them.
I love it.
Yeah, it's really great. So you're making different turrets that will all go, and these also have upgrade paths.
Yes.
Like everything is deep in this. The walls are multiple types of walls, et cetera. Turrets, you can have them be different kinds. You have to focus on line of sight. Mm-hmm. Generally with a turret, if you want to have a wider line of sight, either has to be outside of your wall. Mm-hmm. Like it has to be inside your city, but you have to build your walls in further. Mm-hmm. So if something gets that turret, it's going to cause panic, but it has a full wide range of AOE, things like that.
Mm-hmm. And they have like different like focuses. Like I use the multi ones, which I'm sure are fucking garbage, but like it was worth it to me to like soften up a bunch of targets.
Same.
At a particular time. Like the elevated ones can be built inside and shoot outside. They're just a little bit weaker. I found those to be pretty good. Then they're catapults that you can do. Did you ever fuck with? Yeah. Like they get two charges each night, as what I had, and those hit like a big AOE. It's not very powerful, but again, it is
softens
a way
up
to
a group.
Yes.
Yeah. I ended up like really relying on those during the boss of night two or of the second town.
Yes. Yeah. Very kindly, like you can just choose to upgrade walls. Like you can, like you don't have to demolish an old one. You can like build, go from wooden walls to stone walls, basically for like a discount.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There are traps as well that you can put down. These you have to repair them between, but they'll work multiple times as well. Mm-hmm. This is something that I slept on initially, but these are actually pretty good. Mm-hmm. When I started getting the Sears Tower, which is a building worth camping out on because it's interesting, I would sometimes use traps to shore up a angle of ingress that I did not have a hero for.
Yes.
So like the Sears Tower allows you two things. You can push back the fog. That means the enemies start from further back. You basically have more time to fight them before they get to your town. Or you can get a little cute cartoon arrows that show how big a force is coming in at what side. You always get the general direction, but this could be really misleading.
Yeah.
Like, let's say you know they're coming from the northwest and the northeast. It could be like three runners from the northwest and the entire force from the northeast.
Yeah.
If you're equally splitting your forces there, you have a little bit of a problem. And it's even worse if they're on opposite sides.
Yeah.
Here. Once you actually do that with the Seer Tower, I see, oh, there's just a small arrow here. I bet you my couple traps and a couple turrets can take care of this.
Yeah.
I'm going to actually put my people in control elsewhere.
And you know, it's pretty, that is very important because like as the nights go on within a run, they start coming in from more angles.
Yes.
And it's not going to be equal, from every angle. So like you get a little bit of an indication, like this is where the elite stuff is going to come in. Like there's a different like icon for it, but like understanding like, yeah, there's going to be some overflow on the corners here. Like you might actually really need to put two people here. You could put one person and they can kind of like get both sides.
Well, it also depends on if they're ranged or whatever.
Yes.
Like you can have a melee person on two sides and put a ranged person at the corner to back them both up.
Yes.
Like there's tons of stuff to do. It's neat.
Yeah.
It's fucking neat. Talking about it has made you want to play it again.
Like, it really is. Yeah.
Yeah. It's pretty sick.
It's a good game.
Yeah. Good game. The, apparently the advanced strategy focuses primarily on gold.
Yeah.
Getting your gold economy going. Mm-hmm. Materials, a little bit of a noob trap. Who knew? I'm a noob.
Oh no. If I wanted to use it, it's a noob trap. I was stupid to want that.
If we liked it, we keep hammering that. I know that's not what it is. It's there for people.
Who
are new. Like it works at the level we were playing it at. That's why it's here. Yeah. It's just very funny to go and read and be like, oh no, you were not on the right track.
Yeah, no.
If you had kept up with this, you would have been enlightened eventually. Trust me.
You're building these fucking walls. You think your walls are going to keep him out, man?
Yeah. You're building your house on sand.
Yeah. You fool. You buffoon.
Yeah. It's fun. One thing I wish that's missing that is because I like it and because I'm playing RimWorld at the same time is making aesthetically pleasing.
Yeah.
That's pretty hard to do. In this, you can't really waste resources.
Yeah.
Doing that kind of thing. So it looks really junky. That does fit in with the theme at the end, but I did want to have like more symmetrical placements and kind of couldn't do it.
Also, the fact that you can't rotate buildings and some of them come in L shapes and stuff is a bit of a bummer. That was one of the things when I found out you could dedicate workers, like that those ruins were essentially little pinatas that you could have early on. You also want to clear that real estate because you don't want to build important stuff near the edge, right? There are monsters there. Did you find yourself over the course of like a run, like your lines had to move more inward?
My lines, where I put people, my defensive lines.
Yeah. Like when they, when they start coming from like, more directions at once and the stuff gets bigger, like I found myself kind of drawing in from the very perimeter of the fog. And wanting to stay in towards the core so I didn't have to do as much movement to respond to crises where they popped up.
Yeah, I did that for a different reason. Like I'd already made that change because I wanted my heroes to be within the range of my turrets.
Yeah.
Like I wanted them to be only backed up for that. Mm-hmm. So I very early, initially I just put my guy right in the front line because like that's where the bad guys are, and then eventually put everyone really close in because I want them to be covered. There are disadvantages to this on higher difficulties because enemies are more aggressive. They'll send runners past you. If you do that, you want to be able to have a character who can like hit them from the back.
Yeah,
there. But for me, I did that as well. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. One of the biggest upgrades you get during this is getting an extra hero as well. This is something you have to buy the ability to do.
Yeah.
To have extra heroes, but it is huge. Mm-hmm. Eventually you can have five.
Yeah.
On this thing. And that is, it's a lot to do during a turn. It will make turns take a very long time, but every single time you get a new hero, that is so much more that you can do.
So it's another kind of weapon you can bring in too, yep. You know?
Two weapons.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just more slots. You can make it more well-rounded. And that's one of the ways that you can make the game easier. Like one of the easy mode kind of omens that you get, like little modifiers for a run, is just to raise that cap.
Yes.
At the start, like, oh, I start with four heroes. And you know, that'll make things, you know, much easier for you.
Yeah. We'll talk about omens here right now. Just mm-hmm. as we talk about the metagame progression.
Yeah.
The first time you do the tutorial, you're reached out to by two gods who appear in something called an oraculum. They'll answer questions when you summon them, in cryptic bullshit ways.
Yeah.
It's essentially saying there's a dark god and a light god, mm-hmm. both of which are very suspicious. They both turn into real hot naked ladies.
Yes. They both reveal their form to you.
Yeah. a little Disgaea influence. Kind of saying a penguin can masturbate you. It's not a tactics game. The Disgaea way.
Yeah. I also like that, like, you can ask them several times what the fucking oraculum is, and they don't just say it's a place where oracles do shit.
No. It's also, this oracles aren't doing anything here.
No.
It's just a cool sounding name.
Like, yeah.
They're really obviously hiding stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't like that the dark god's name is Schaden and the light god's name is Freude.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
You know, like Schadenfreude is like a, you know, like a concept, you know, like it can be heady. I associate it with like watching people who celebrate too early in races trip and fall.
Yeah. Right? It's something I like.
It's a genre of video. Yeah.
Yeah. It's not something that I like having. When Amanda Palmer got in trouble.
Yeah.
You know, like, oh, no, I've always disliked her and she's a sex trafficker. Cool.
Uh-huh. Okay.
You know, that's kind of good for me.
You it's know, terrible she did it, but yeah.
So of course it is, but I can't do anything about that. I can feel a little bit good that she's in trouble because I never liked her. Mm-hmm. I wish she hadn't done it.
No.
The Dark God feeds on experience directly, mm-hmm. tainted essence. And these are for permanent upgrades you can get. This is unlocking new possibility spaces. So in a roguelike, like the chance that a weapon will appear, mm-hmm. The chance that a consumable will appear, things like that. It is also how you get permanent stat upgrades across the board.
Yes.
So like all your characters from now on will have plus 3% damage.
Mm-hmm.
Things like that.
Yeah.
And buildings. This is like your tech tree, basically.
Yeah, yeah. Tech tree is a good way to put it. Except you can't see what's coming down the pike. So like some of the stuff that just unlocked, I have no idea like why it showed up at that point. But it's like, oh, I can buy teleporters now. That's weird. I didn't know that was in the offing.
And these cost a certain amount of points and you can pay in installments.
Yeah.
If you want. I don't think you lose essence. Mm-hmm. When you die, that would be a reason to pay in installments.
Yeah.
I can't remember exactly, but it is an option. So just know, just because something's on the menu and it's lit up does not mean you have enough to pay for it.
Yes.
You can click on it and you'll just fill it up most of the way. And then maybe you wanted to unlock something different. It was easier. Mm-hmm. This is, these are laid out the way that they always are in this type of game with, more elemental things being cheap, mm-hmm. like things that are basically part of the base game experience. Unlocking all the weapons is cheap.
Yeah.
And then with more advanced things being more expensive because they want you to play more of the game before you get to the more complicated concept.
Yeah. The costs on them ramp up substantially.
Yes.
Like it is trying to push you into more difficult maps where you're going to be killing more and getting more experience out of the side of it. Like you're going to, you know, hit diminishing returns on the easy stuff.
Yeah. The Light God instead looks at like achievements.
Yeah.
You've done X or Y. So you get this bonus mm-hmm. Here. So the things you get more passively.
Yeah. It's like, oh, you killed this many enemies with a spear. Now you can unlock these spear like sub-variants.
Yes. Or you can unlock a boon or an omen that allow you to have more spears.
Yes.
Omens are your modifiers, like your ring slots for the entire run. Mm-hmm. You have a limited number of points you can put into these. And you can have a limited number of omens that are active in it. And these allow you to tailor what advantages and eventually disadvantages you want to have
mm-hmm.
after this. Think like heat, but also positive from Hades, for example. The game is meant to be played with some of these unlocked.
Yes.
It's not cheating to like choose accuracy as one of these and say, I'm never going to worry about accuracy. My guys are always going to hit.
They wouldn't be so prominent in the tech tree if you weren't meant to use them, right?
what is cheating mode, which I did engage with, more because I wanted to see more of the game before we recorded.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I know I could have gotten past the second town without it eventually.
The problems that I had in the town were just because I didn't have, like, I didn't have basic shit unlocked.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, and I wanted, yeah, exactly. I wanted to have all the tools to try it. But there's something called Boundless Mode, which lets you put on as many omens as you like.
Yeah.
This does make a big difference. If you're playing this and this sounds like it is too complicated or hard, know that it's not a fail state to put on Boundless Mode. I do think that it is probably good to play it a little bit without it to see what it's like.
Yeah.
You know, I think if you just like you pumped all of the omens from the very start, you'd be like, the first town was child's play. This is a baby game. Do it, fail it, and then start giving yourself some bonuses where you need them.
Yeah. And then feather back as it seems fit. Like, okay, I don't need that. I don't need those extra move points now.
Yes.
Like I see how I can make the most out of, you know, kind of what I get, or like, I see that like, oh, it grows and like, yeah. I have so much more than I need to.
I've unlocked teleporters, so I don't need as many move points.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Characters, I can build these and characters can cover more area on their own.
Yeah. So this is like a difficulty Sunday bar. And what I love is that there is no downside to this except for your experience. As far as I can tell, you don't get less experience for doing this.
There's no downside except for your lowercase e experience.
Yes. Yeah.
There's no downside in uppercase e experience.
Yeah. I realize I just used two synonyms different. two synonyms differently. Yeah. So like you're going to progress faster because you're, you know, clearing runs more likely with this or killing more things, actually. But like out of the box, you know, before I unlocked a whole bunch of omens, when I did Boundless Mode with just kind of the ones that came with it, I beat the run, but it was like I was hanging on by fingernails.
Yeah.
On it.
And that is the ideal place where video games live.
Yeah.
You know, barely winning is what you want to do.
I want to leave everything on the field. Yeah. Yeah.
That's a really good feeling.
Yeah.
So it's cool. Again, talking about speaking, and there's no judgment in these either. Mm-hmm. Like you can, when you hover over the Boundless Mode, it's like, yeah, if you want to do this, it's fine.
Yeah.
You know, like it's not going to impact anything. We designed it without it, but if you want to do it, go nuts. Yeah. Reminds me of Radiant Mode in Darkest Dungeon again.
Yeah.
Darkest Dungeon DNA in this too.
Yeah. Radiant Mode, like the customizable difficulty, like an Infernax or Celeste.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Good behavior. Mm-hmm. From devs, I think.
Yeah. And just makes this like viable. Like you're still going to be spending a whole bunch of time on this. Like that, I think, is the biggest barrier, I think. But like, this isn't a game that wants to rebuke you that much.
No. No. Get to the bosses. I only fought two of these.
Yeah.
You know, which is unsatisfying. Both of them were absolute bastards. You know?
The fights are so long.
They're so long. The second one, I was like, many audible, come the fuck on. Like many times just to my computer in the dark, hunched over my gamer chair going, come the fuck on.
I can't have to kill you that many times.
Yeah. Really? Okay. The first night in Gildenburg are these corrupted harpies. They said there's a harpy up on the mountain, looks down at you, and will send down her minions through this. And regular harpies and then these kind of bigger, stronger harpies, and she will boost them as they go.
Yeah. Like each harpy, so like there's only one at the start and then secondary harpies come in. Like there are three of them, and each one can do like either a boost of enemies or like a debuff on you.
Yes.
So like suddenly you have half as many actions. Suddenly you can't move as far. And these harpies can deploy, you know, like enemies are going to be coming from every direction, but like they can just deploy like randomly, like drop into the middle of ranks.
Yeah.
And you have to like kind of reconfigure. Something I love about Gildenburg that I kind of didn't realize until I went to the second one. So like the harpies appear on a mountain, and that is like on the northwest side of the town, like on the isometric. That is so cool because your first map just takes a direction off of the table. Like enemies, even at the most, are only going to be coming from three places.
Yeah, it's really smart.
Yeah.
This one is not nearly as bad as the second boss. To me, Cestua, the putrescent worm. Cestua, the putrescent worm.
Yeah.
Which the second town is a lake town. So this is obviously like a big kraken kind of thing with big tentacles and stuff. Its kind of concept is that when it can teleport around the whole map.
Or wherever there's water.
Wherever there's water.
Where it is.
It can make swaths of water. From like gangplanks and shit that you have. It can bust these open by appearing, and then it sends up tentacles. in these different areas, and it will keep doing it. It has tons of resistance, tons of health to bring down, and until you kill the head, the tentacles will keep coming.
Yes. There's also the tail to take into consideration, and the tail can do a shitload of damage when it pops up. Like, this is meant to, like, melt your walls.
Yes.
And even though you don't have to defeat every enemy on the last night, they're going to keep coming.
Yeah, you kind of don't want to.
No,
like finding the balance between fighting regular enemies and focusing down the boss. The bosses are so strong that you cannot just focus them down and get past it entirely.
Yeah.
So you have to find balance to it. Further, these guys spit a bunch of eggs.
Yeah,
and these are emergencies because if they you want to blow these up, they do damage everything around them if you blow them up. So it's nice when they're by enemies, but otherwise they're going to give birth to more monsters.
Yeah. And those guys will start rolling around and attacking, kind of fucking stuff
very
up.
Quickly get out of control. This guy just kept coming back.
Yeah.
You kill him the main time and he came back again, through the thing. Cause I hadn't fought all the bits.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that his hand kept seemingly could just keep coming back, until I killed him. Like, this is also a thing where range became a real problem. This guy burst up in a corner and maybe the only character who I assigned to that corner can't actually get to him. Like, this is an axe user.
Yeah.
Standing on the edge of the pier, he can't reach. Or he can only reach with one of his skills. You know, so I didn't have teleporters at this point. I might have to completely reconfigure my dudes.
Yeah.
Send this axe guy over to where there's a bunch of nobodies. Send my spear user over there. And by that point, he might move.
I have to shuffle. Yeah, he might move. Like, this actually was where, like, my rifles and longbows came in clutch.
Yeah.
And my towers. Take that, people who are good at this game.
Exactly. All of my damage I get to this guy was longbows.
Yeah.
You know, until I ran out of mana and could only do regular shots, and it just took forever.
Yeah.
You know, I mana potions to regain mana in the fight did not drop during that run, so I didn't have that as an option.
Yeah.
It was just a huge war of attrition. Like, I barely beat this. The panic, and this was, I'd used a bunch of omens. They put on boundless mode. I barely beat this. The panic was fucking through the roof.
Yeah.
In the town because he was in the town for the most part. Like, it was, again, cinematic. Like, this felt like a town barely surviving against a gigantic kraken.
Thing. Yeah. And, you know, once you learn, like, okay, my heroes aren't going to carry over. Like, all I have to do is survive this.
Yes.
Right? Like, all right, well, like, in preparation for the boss, I was pretty sure it was going to be pretty tough. I started, like building, like, layers of walls around the core.
Mm.
And it's like, I'm just going to have to be fine with enemies in here and attacking. You know, at least the small ones, like, you know, maybe there's a staff that's going to, like, prune them, but, like, if I have several strong walls up that they're going to get through, that's going to buy me time.
Yeah. These guys keep them occupied. Give them busy board.
Yeah.
Those guys, really hard. Tusha, surprisingly hard.
Yeah.
And it's kind of the fact that I so barely made it. When I finished this, I unlocked the teleporters, which I wanted.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, I would like to keep playing because this map, instead of teaching you how to use teleporters, it teaches you why to use them.
Yeah. It really hammers home. Like, yeah, you're going to, like, this could be useful. Like, this would have solved that problem that
Wouldn't you have wanted that?
Yeah.
Here it is.
I was like, oh, I absolutely do. I want to see what other lessons these later maps are going to teach me.
Same. Yeah. You know, but I thought that because my thinking was, since this boss was to teach me to want something I didn't have yet, the third boss, I'm probably going to want something that I'm not going to get until after it. I'm probably going to die on it. Do I have another, like, 10 hours?
Yeah.
And it maybe it wouldn't have been, but that isn't my excuse for tapping out after Satusia.
Pretty much the same. Like, I hit the 20 hour mark. And I still want more, honestly.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I don't know that I'm ever gonna, like, beat this game, but, like, this is neat. I don't know. I feel like they made a lot of good decisions aside from the length of the run. And I don't know that you could fix that and have this remain the same game.
And even that's, like, a subjective thing.
That's a taste
thing. People
are
going to be way into that.
Yeah.
I want to see the other bosses too. One of the things is that this is a pretty complicated game.
Yeah.
This, I think, works on Steam Deck. But I didn't try it on that. Being able to play this in bed would have made a big difference.
Yeah.
Like, do a couple nights, you know, before bed. The fact that I was playing this on my actual PC.
Yeah,
made this more difficult to fit into my life, I guess.
Yeah, I tried it with the gamepad controls. It kind of works, you know. I found myself wanting to be able to hover over stuff.
Yeah, The hover over is really neat, like useful in this.
Yeah.
So that's not quite the last spell, but that's our experience with the last spell.
Yeah.
You know, with where we got it. Cool game. If any of this sounds good to you, like this could be a hole made for you.
Yeah.
I feel like people go fucking nuts on this. This is mm-hmm. one of those like thousands of hours games. They're doing like ascensions mm-hmm. and shit, like playing on the ultimate modes.
Yeah.
Like this can be that for you.
Yeah. It's also like it regularly shows up very cheap. Like yeah. this is something that's kind of perennially on sale, including the expansions and stuff. Like I'm going to want to poke at this more. Well, who knows if same. I will, but.
Well, and the idea of like, this does some new stuff in the tactics space, specifically that idea of swaths of enemies.
Yeah.
Is not something you see in tactics.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I played a bunch of tactics games. I love tactics games. This is something that was missing mm-hmm. from that. Like that, you know, far be it for me to praise Dynasty Warriors. I don't like Dynasty Warriors, but getting that feeling in a gameplay model that I like
mm-hmm.
is really pretty useful. Like yeah. that's pretty neat.
Yeah.
I think. Yeah. Any other final thoughts on the last spell?
No. Like I'm a little bit curious because like in doing research and putting the notes together, like we kind of have unlocked everything. At least that's accounted for on the wiki, right?
Yeah.
Not things that are specific to the to the DLCs and stuff. I'm kind of curious how like the verb set grows.
Me too.
If they like how they continue throwing like new challenges at you in the later maps. It's a little bit of a bummer finding out that like, oh yeah, no, you've kind of used every weapon that there is to use. But there's got to be some other way that they keep the novelty there, because yeah. that's largely what I want.
Where the interest would be for me would be, how is this game going to push me out of these things that I like doing now?
Yeah.
Is it, you know, going to do, like, I've seen the end point. I've seen my point, which is like, I like our archers and towers.
Yeah.
I've seen the YouTubers are like, hey, you really don't need, I don't spend a lot of money on this. Don't do this. Mm-hmm. And I want to see how the game communicates that. Yeah. I just know the question and the answer. I don't know. I want to show its work. You know, yeah. I would like that. That's what continuing to play it would do.
Yeah.
For me. Show me the equation, which I would like.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So big thanks, Joshua.
Yeah. Huge thanks.
This was not on my radar.
Mm-hmm.
If you're hearing this and you're any kind of marginalized person, you're a project or product you'd like us to shout out, please send me an email at gary@duckfeed.tv. I have one here from Jules, who has a shout out for a project called Post Heist. This is a card game. It's going to be on Kickstarter, launching May 17th.
Mm-hmm.
And looks real neat. I've seen pictures of it and stuff. You can find them. Just take a look at them. It's happyclappygames.com mm-hmm. is their website. Post Heist the game, at Post Heist game on Blue Sky. Mm-hmm. They're on Facebook, Instagram, Kickstarter. The Kickstarter launches on the 17th.
Yes.
So put that on your calendar. It looks neat.
Post Heist is a really good name.
Yeah. And the illustrations are great mm-hmm. through this. They have a thing called the Oaf Stone. There's a card called Oaf Stone, and it looks like that
uh-huh.
to me. Yeah, it's sick.
Yeah.
So it's about divvying up treasures after a heist.
Nice.
Obviously. Really smart idea for a game. Looks really cool. Really hope you check it out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What can they do if they like us?
If you like us, you can go to patreon.com/duckfeedtv and kick us a few bucks and get a bunch of bonus content, including all of our premium episodes. The response to the Resident Evil 9 episode has been huge. Thank mm-hmm. you so much, everybody. If you topped on and became a patron for that one, welcome. We really love having you here.
Yeah, there's a lot of other stuff to check out. Mm-hmm. We would appreciate it.
Yeah. If you have thoughts about the last spell or this month's games, which are The Last Spell, Rimworld, and Rage, mm-hmm. I want to make sure. Yes. And Rage. Rage is our premium episode. You can go to duckfeed.tv/contact and use the buttons there to write in. The deadline for that is always the 15th of the month.
Yes. If you have thoughts about multiple games, please send in multiple responses. Mm-hmm. Keep your thoughts to the point and specific, mm-hmm. and we will probably read them during our dispatch. Yeah. Really curious about people who have things to say about this game specifically, yeah. who went deeper on it. Happy to do so. Mm-hmm. If you want to submit questions or topics for those dispatches, that's in our Patreon.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about that Patreon, but again, it's really good. You mm-hmm. can also leave us ratings and reviews on Apple Podcasts, Podcast Addict, subscribe, do all those normal podcast things, and mm-hmm. Talk about us on message boards, talk about us on Reddit, things like that.
Yeah.
Very appreciated.
Yeah.
I think, thank Gwen. Big thanks to Gwen.
Big thanks to Gwen.
Yeah. Yeah. What should they watch out for until next time, Kay?
No, watch out for watchtowers, you fucking noob.
Yeah, stupid noobs.